calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
And greetings, friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. It's the first hour of our Friday program. On the air Monday through Friday, 9 to noon Pacific time, noon to 3 Eastern time. And the first hour of our Friday program has been for years now. Congressman Bernie Sanders, the only independent in the House of Representatives. I think of him as America's congressman. He's the go-to guy in my mind for all things. I have yet to find an issue where Bernie and I have daylight between our positions. I'm sure there are some out there, but anyhow, Congressman Bernie Sanders, his website, bernie.org, our telephone number, 1-866-440-8466 to call into the program. Bernie likes to take your calls. That's what we'll be doing this hour. First, Congressman Bernie Sanders, welcome to the program.
Good to be with you, Tom.
Always great to have you here with us, Bernie. It is always great. The day before yesterday in the House of Representatives, there was a vote about whether or not the rights of habeas corpus should be taken away, whether the president should essentially be made an emperor and given the ability to declare anybody. And I talked with Michael Ratner, the Center for Constitutional Rights this morning, president of that group, and he said that this piece of legislation actually doesn't even exclude American citizens. It simply has the word persons in it. Whether anybody can be declared an enemy combatant and thus lose access to a judge, a jury, a lawyer. You voted against it in the House. Then it went to the Senate, and here we are.
Well, you know, it is no secret that this president does not like an independent judiciary. This president believes that he has the right to declare who is an enemy and do anything that he wants to investigate that person. That has been the modus operandi of this administration from day one. They really do not particularly understand the Constitution of the United States, the separation of powers, the right of people to have judicial review. They say, hey, we don't like this person. We think he's a danger. He does not have to have, or she does not have to have rights guaranteed by the Constitution. That's number one. So this is a very, very bad and dangerous piece of legislation. But the second point to be made, this has to be brought within the context, discussed within the context of the current political situation. As everybody knows, there's an election in 5 weeks. Everybody knows that the Republicans control the White House, the U.S. Senate, the U.S. House of Representatives, and that in virtually every area, this country is moving in the wrong direction, whether it's the economy, whether it's healthcare, whether it's education, veterans' needs, the environment, the growing gap between the rich and the poor, you name it. So what these guys have managed to do, Karl Rove, by the way, told us a few months ago that this is what would happen. He was kind enough to tell us, and the media, of course, has responded accordingly, is that what we will be discussing is terrorism, the various manifestations of terrorism. So, A, this is a very bad and dangerous piece of legislation. B, what is going on now is an attempt by the Republican leadership to deflect attention away from the horrendous record of the Bush administration on virtually every issue, and see that if in the next 5 weeks we could only be discussing terrorism. They see that as the one area where they may have, according to polls, some slight advantage over the Democrats.
Yeah, in fact, somebody called into the program yesterday and said, and so I qualify this by that. I mean, this is hearsay. I didn't see the actual report, but suggested that there was a survey that found that 4 out of 5 people, if you ask them about Iraq, say that they would vote for a Democrat over a Republican.
Right. Right.
Whereas if you ask them about terrorism, they would vote for a Republican over a Democrat, about the same ratio.
And end of discussion, Tom, and that's it.
Yeah,
what people don't know, because I'm sitting here in Washington, D.C., is people really do not understand the total cynicism that exists here. We are not discussing public policy. We're not discussing what is good for America. We're not talking about honest disagreements that people might have about policies that will work for the American people. What you're talking about is politics 100%. In a time when the Republicans have failed in virtually every area, what issues can they get the media to look at, which hopefully will give them an advantage over Democrats? So, for example, when you talk about Iraq, there was a poll that was done by the University of Maryland's Program on International Policy Attitudes. They did a poll in Iraq. And what the poll found, that, and I'm quoting from the thing, about 6 in 10 Iraqis, say they approve of attacks on U.S.-led forces, and slightly more than that want their government to ask U.S. troops to leave within a year. So, end of quote. So there you have us continuing to be in Iraq, and a strong majority of the Iraqi people now approve of attacks against American troops. And according to the president, we are there now fighting terrorists and fighting for freedom, and the Iraqi people want to see American troops being killed. Now, maybe we might want to discuss this issue, and the Iraqi people want us out of their country as soon
as... But the Republicans don't want to discuss it.
Of course they don't want to discuss it, and the media doesn't want to discuss it, because all the president has to do is say, this is what we're discussing, which is what Karl Rove was kind enough to tell us 2 months ago. You remember that.
Oh, yeah.
Karl Rove said, what we're going to be discussing in the next 2 months is terrorism. Media said, fine, we'll do that. We won't talk about the collapse of the middle class. We won't talk about the increase in poverty. We won't talk about the fact that 7 million Americans, since Bush has been president, have lost their health insurance. We won't talk about a $700 billion trade deficit and the loss of millions of good-paying jobs. No, Karl Rove said, we're going to be talking about terrorism, and obviously that's what we will be talking about. And then what they do every day, there will be another story about terrorism. And hopefully the Republicans think that can carry them over and to maintain their majority. Frankly, I don't think so, because I think the American people understand, and there was some discussion about an intelligence report recently, which was leaked and then released by the White House, which suggests what many of us have been talking about for years, that the American presence in Iraq is not only inflaming the insurgency there, but is inflaming Islamic fundamentalism all over the world. That the longer we're there, the better Osama bin Laden and his friends are doing. And that is what the conclusion of the American intelligence agencies was. But we won't talk about that terribly much.
Yeah, so we've spent $500 billion to harm our own interests, and Bush struts around and brags about it. I'm just astounded.
Well, the word astounded has lost its meaning here in Washington.
I
mean, it's no longer means anything.
In the meantime, go ahead. I'm sorry.
You have a proliferation now of Al-Qaeda cells all over the world, more and more terrorist activity. The people in Iraq, by a pretty strong majority, think it's okay to kill American troops, and this guy's the president's policy is stay the course. Hey, we're just doing great. Yeah. We're just doing great.
Yeah. In the meantime, we discovered this week that Jack Abramoff was George W. Bush had been saying, Jack Abramoff, I'm not sure I know that guy. I think maybe he was here for a Hanukkah celebration once. That he visited the White House more than once, shall we say.
Well, he had apparently, according to a review done by the Government Reform Committee, apparently, he had more than 400 contacts with the White House between 2001 and 2004. I mean, I think what it gets down to.
No, let me just clarify that. 400 contacts over a 4-year period. That's 100 a year. There's only 360 days in a year, so that's one every 3 days. And if you exclude weekends, and he took Saturdays off at the very least. If you exclude weekends, that's
a huge amount.
3 out of 5 days in a business week. I mean,
no,
amazing.
The bottom line here is this guy was very tight with the administration, despite their denials. And it really does tell us that at the end of the day, what the Republican leadership here is about is not trying to protect the economy for the middle class. It's not trying to protect and create good-paying jobs or health care for all people. That's the furthest thing from their minds. What it is about is making their wealthy friends even wealthier, and to heck with everybody else. And in that sense, they are, of course, succeeding, because what is happening in America is while the middle class shrinks and poverty increases, Jack Abramoff and his friends, those people, are doing phenomenally well. We have seen in recent years a proliferation of millionaires and, in fact, billionaires. We now have the widest gap between the rich and the poor of any industrialized nation on earth. Corporate profits are soaring. All the while, people are working, average people are working longer hours for lower wages. People can't afford health care, can't afford college education, can't afford child care. But the good news is that for George Bush and his very, very wealthy friends, those people are doing better than at any time in our lifetimes.
Yeah, they want us to pay attention to the stock market and not to the labor pages aren't there anymore, but to the labor market.
You know, it is so cynical, and it bothers me. And you know, you and I have talked on an issue that I think is just of huge consequence, and that is corporate control over the media, not because of how stories are twisted, but primarily because of what stories are covered. Who determines what is important?
Yeah, and there certainly is an institutional bias there.
Yes.
16 minutes past the hour. We're talking with Congressman Bernie Sanders. Bernie.org, his website, 866-440-8466. Our telephone number will be back with your phone calls for Bernie Sanders right after this. I'm Tom Hartman.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back to listener-supported radio. You can support this program. Let your radio stations know you're listening and that you appreciate the program and any programming, frankly, and that you like. And also support our sponsors, our local sponsors in particular, and also our national sponsors like Sacred Ground Coffee, saving the planet one cup at a time. Their telephone number, 1-800-425-2532. Their website, sacredgrounds.com. And Small Dog Electronics, get the latest iPods now, 1-800-511-MAX, 511-MACS, or smalldog.com. And the organic wine company, ecowine.com, 1-888-ECO-WINE. We're back with Congressman Bernie Sanders, and your telephone calls are number 1-866-440-8466. And KJ in Camas, Washington, you're live with Bernie Sanders.
Yes, hi, Congressman. I have a question, but before that, here's an interesting story. I used to write science blogs for this high-traffic website, and one of the articles I wrote was about the panic that is created by the media, and I pointed out that people have a greater chance of being killed by lightning than by a terrorist. Well, of all the articles that I've posted, the text to that one article has disappeared. Now, that said, with this new legislation, it basically immunizes King George W., so I take it that there is absolutely no way on earth that we can ever hold this monster accountable for anything he has ever done?
Well, let me rephrase your question and put it this way. One of the many, many failures of the current U.S. Congress, way at the top of the list, is their failure to exercise their constitutional responsibility of oversight. So what we have seen is year after year since Bush has been president is all kinds of decisions have been made, legislation has been passed, policies have been developed, and they are not questioned at the committee level. So Bush can get away with murder, and he has a rubber stamp, Congress, never to question or to raise the issues regarding what he is doing. So to answer your question, one of the very, very important reasons why we have to end one-party government in America, Republican control of the White House, the House, and the Senate, is, among many other things, so that serious committees can begin to ask the hard questions of this administration as to why they have done what they have done and what the impact of their decisions have been. Those questions have not been asked and will not be asked, in my opinion, so long as the Republicans continue to control the House and the Senate. So to answer your question, yes, we can begin to undo the damage. We can begin to ask the questions, but it is not going to happen if the Republicans continue to control the House and the Senate. Now, the good news is...
Bernie, may I just interrupt you in midstream here? Wasn't Senator Fulbright from Wisconsin a Republican?
No, Fulbright was a Democrat from Arkansas.
He was a Democrat. Okay, I'm sorry. Okay. Continue your rant. I'm off.
So that is of extreme importance. And the good news is that right now, based on the polling that people are analyzing, the Democrats have a reasonable chance to win the House, a reasonable chance to win the Senate. But all of that is going to be dependent upon voter turnout and making sure that people get to the polls on November 7th so that we can change the direction of this country.
Yeah, well said. 1-866-440-8466. The reason I was asking, I knew that there was a Republican senator who was initiating investigations of Richard Nixon, and I thought it was Fulbright, but obviously I was wrong on that. Anyway, my point was, and maybe you can set me right on this, Bernie. My understanding is that in the past, when Republicans have controlled, well, for example, Albert Fell, the Harding administration, it was you had Republicans controlling the House, the Senate, and the presidency, and yet it was Republicans who initiated the investigation into Teapot Dome, which almost brought down the Harding administration.
Well, I think
Democrats have investigated Democrats.
Right.
Oh, that's right. It was Fulbright who was investigating LBJ.
Okay.
And so isn't this the first time that we've had one-party rule and that one party has refused to investigate itself?
It's not just me. I mean, what people who know a lot more about these things than I do, who are historians, congressional historians, will tell you that there has never been the kind of rubber stamp Congress in the past that we are seeing today. So the president says what he wants to do, and these guys refuse to challenge him, refuse to ask the hard questions. Millions and millions of Americans would love to know why we got into Iraq in the first place. What were the real reasons? What kind of intelligence did, in fact, the president receive? Is he right in saying that the reason we went into Iraq is because he got faulty intelligence? Many, many people believe that that is not the case, that he got a lot of intelligence which told him that Iraq did not have weapons of mass destruction, that Iraq was not allied with al-Qaeda. I think that that is a hearing and an investigation that should take place, must take place, so long as the Republicans control the Congress, it won't. But to answer your question, Tom, I think most observers will tell you there has never been as complacent, compliant, and subservient U.S. Congress, certainly in the modern history of this country.
Yeah, the Democrats are now starting to call it the Do-Nothing Congress, which is what Harry Truman called the All-Republican House and Senate back in
the late
40s.
Not only aren't they passing good legislation, they're simply acting as a rubber stamp for the White House.
Yeah, indeed. We'll be back with your phone calls in just a moment. It's 27 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here. We're talking with Congressman Bernie Sanders. It's our Brunch with Bernie segment. Bernie.org, his website, 866-440-8466, our telephone number, 27 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
See, we live in a world of false pretense. If it don't make dollars, it don't make sense. My credit is a joke, the banks ain't lending. I ain't broke yet, but I'm showing up bending. Living in a world of false pretense. If it don't make dollars, then it don't make sense. My credit is a joke, and the banks ain't lending. Ain't broke yet, but I'm showing up bending.
Well, he ain't broke yet, but he's showing up bending.
Ain't broke yet, but I'm showing up bending.
The story of the American middle class. The American middle class, increasingly screwed. By the way, the title of my new book, Screwed, The Undeclared War Against the Middle Class, which I will be signing tomorrow, Saturday, September 30th, at the Bodhi Tree in Los Angeles at 8 p.m. This can't be right. Oh, on October, and I'm missing one. Bodhi Tree at 8 p.m., 4 p.m. tomorrow. I'll also be in Pasadena. And what's the name of the bookstore, David?
Give me just a minute.
Okay, thank you. Give me just a minute is the name of the bookstore. And Annie Bloom's books on October 5th in Portland, Oregon, and October 6th at the Town Hall. Elliott Bay Book Company signing is sponsored a book signing in Seattle. So we'll be in the Town Hall in Seattle. And that one, there's $5 tickets. We're going to do a whole gig there. But the cost of the tickets just basically is just paying for the Town Hall. Nobody's making a buck on this thing. Although Talk 1090 in Seattle's helping put the thing on. It is our Brunch with Bernie segment. Congressman Bernie Sanders with us. 1-866-440-8466, our telephone number. And Bernie, Dave in Chicago, Illinois, on the line with you.
Bernie, hello.
Hi, Dave. How are you?
I'm fine. I called a while ago and asked what you could do to, if you had a couple $100 to give to some candidates. And you said, you know, find some local people. And I did that, started talking with people here. And a lot of what I'm finding is when I talk with Republicans, at least in Illinois and where I live, they're very responsive to the issues. There's such a range of issues, from NSA spying to the budget problems to weakening the military. There's so many problems that they're all responsive. Nobody I talk to likes the war. You know, and trying to get them then to vote for a Democrat and realize the only real solution is a Democratic House, or hopefully a Democratic House and Senate. How do we get the message out?
Well, Dave, you are doing it. I mean, that is, you touched on exactly the right issues, and I applaud you for getting out and talking to people who may not agree with you on every issue. The truth of the matter is that most Republicans, or many Republicans around this country, are nowhere near as right-wing as the leadership in the U.S. Congress and the President of the United States. And if you talk to Republicans about fiscal responsibility, that is supposed to be the essence of what conservatism is about. And yet in the White House now, you have a guy who has run up record-breaking deficits, a huge national debt. That is not fiscally conservative. You have, in terms of what Republicans are supposed to be about, is limited government. The bill that was passed the other day, tremendously expanding surveillance capabilities on part of the White House, attacking our constitutional rights, that's not traditional Republicanism. That is big government at its worst. That is big government getting into our phones. That is big government getting into our emails, big government getting into our homes without judicial review. So I think on many issues, trade issues, you talk to the average Republican and you think, ask them if they think it is a good idea that American corporations are throwing millions of American workers out on the street, moving to China, building up that country. You know what I think? I think many Republicans say, no, we have real serious concerns about that. So I think what we have to do is understand that honest people will disagree on this or that issue. But I think if you talk to Republicans about the issue of fiscal responsibility, about the war in Iraq, about trade, about civil liberties, I think you're going to find a lot of Republicans who are going to be nodding their heads and say, sorry, we can't sustain. We don't want to sustain the Bush ideology any longer. We want to end one-party government.
Paul in Marquette, Michigan is on the line with you, Bernie.
Yeah, good
Paul?
Morning. It seems like if the government under this new torture bill that looks like it's going to be signed can essentially pick up any citizen or non-citizen, hold them without charges, you don't even have the right to represent yourself, all those kinds of things, it seems like the government can pretty much do whatever they want to do. I'm wondering, is there anything they really can't do at this point?
Well, when you're talking about the government, you're really meaning the administration.
The Bush administration,
yeah.
Right.
And that's what, and that is exactly what this entire debate has been about from day one. The Bush administration does not think Congress should play much of a role. The Bush administration does not believe that courts should have the historical right of judicial review. The Bush administration believes that it can target anybody they want, not be interfered with by the courts or by Congress, and do whatever it wants to do. The answer is, of course, there is something that we can do about it, and that is we can end one-party government in the United States, make it very clear to the American people that we can effectively protect our country, we can effectively deal with a very serious issue of global terrorism, but we can do that in a way that does not undermine basic constitutional rights. And the answer is again, that we have to end one-party government.
It's actually a stronger way to defeat terrorism. It's to do it right and to do it
right. Right. I mean, I think.
I mean, you want to be able to prosecute these guys.
That's correct. And number two, you're not going to be able to fight international terrorism unless we have the support of the international community. And when in country after country, all over the world, people are shaking their heads about what's going on in America, they're saying no. If my prime minister, my president wants to cooperate with this president, we're going to throw him out of office. We don't want anything to do with the United States.
Yeah.
How can we effectively fight terrorism when the most powerful nation on earth is held in increasing disdain by countries not only in the developed world, but in the developing world as well?
Yeah, indeed. Don in Northampton, Massachusetts, you're live with Bernie Sanders.
Hey, good afternoon. My question is, I'm just wondering if there's any contingencies for with the great stakes that are coming up here in the midterm elections. I just happen to believe that the election's going to be rigged. When the exit polls show that the Democrats won astoundingly and the official results come out that the Republicans win, what happens then?
Well, I'm not going to speculate what's going to happen because I certainly hope that that does not happen. The exit polls, not exit polls, the projections right now in terms of these generic polls that they do, not exit polls, which suggest they ask people, you know, if you had a choice between a Democrat or a Republican without any particular name, who would you vote for? Democrats are now doing quite well, depending on the poll, 5, 8, 10, 12 points ahead of the Republicans, which is a lot. And the pundits suggest that right now it looks like the Democrats could gain control over the House if the election were held today. It's very close in the Senate, not quite sure. To answer your question in two ways, I think the first thing we have got to do is make sure that we bring out as many people as possible. One thing the Republicans do very, very well, they do better than Democrats, is politics, is get out the vote. The goal of politics is to make sure that everybody who agrees with you, in fact, gets to the polls. And we have got to focus on that in the next 5 weeks. Number two, in terms of the caller's concern about touchscreen voting, there is growing concern all over the country about that. Some couple of years ago, there were relatively few people who were talking about it. Now there is more. There was just a hearing held right here in Congress the other day where a fellow was able to hack into, set up a touchscreen machine, hack into it, and change the results. Princeton University indicated that that is quite possible, that that can be done.
Easy, in fact.
So my own feeling is that if there is any doubt on the part of the American people as to whether the votes being cast are accurately counted, why take the chance? Why be safe rather than sorry? So I think
why be sorry rather than safe?
I'm sorry. That's what we want to do. And I would much prefer going back to paper ballots rather than having people question whether a vote was manipulated.
Yeah, well said. 1-866-440-8466, our telephone number. Harry in Seattle, Washington. You're live with Bernie Sanders.
Hi, Bernie.
Hey, Harry.
You guys are such a breath of sanity. I want to ask a question about a couple weeks ago. There was a secret option or something that was thrown out by some senator, Republican senator.
You're talking about the secret hold?
Yes. Why wasn't that used for this legislation yesterday? Why didn't somebody have the cojones to step up and go, and just say, yeah, ain't going to happen?
Harry, I just don't know the answer to that. Sorry.
Yeah, I'm guessing, Bernie, that it had to do with, you know, putting a hold on a bill is the same thing as filibustering it, and it takes 60 votes to break that, which means that it takes 40 votes to sustain it. And this bill passed yesterday by 65 to 34. There was only 34 no votes, which means that they didn't have the 40 votes they needed to sustain a filibuster.
That could be the simple explanation.
Yeah, and therefore probably nobody wanted to stick their neck out when their own party wouldn't support them. But who knows? Rebecca in Langley, Washington. We have about a minute before a break here, Rebecca.
Oh, I'm just wondering about an article I read in Op-Ed News. I think this guy has lots of interesting articles. I think you've mentioned him, too, that he's a friend of yours. But this possibility that there might be a bioweapons attack domestically,
Keith Olbermann just got some powder in the mail a couple days
ago. Yeah, and
it was nothing dangerous. But.
Right, but that they use this anthrax thing, you know, before to get the Patriot Act passed, really. I mean, there are questions as to whether, you know, this was something that was planned to manipulate people in Congress.
So your question, Rebecca?
So the question is, do you think this could happen? Are people in Congress aware of this as something that could be coming forward to...
This is not something that I've heard discussed. No.
Yeah, okay. Well, that's good. That's reassuring. It's just, I think what we're hearing, Bernie, is from our listeners, is that they've reached the point of cynicism or concern that, you know, nothing's beyond Karl Rove. And I think it's a real tragedy in America that we've reached that point in our political discourse. It's Congressman Bernie Sanders with us, our Brunch with Bernie segment, 45 minutes past the hour. We'll be back with your calls right after this break.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
It's coming through a hole in the air from those nasty Tiananmen Square. It's coming from the field that this ain't exactly real, or it's real but it ain't exactly there. From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the homeless, from the ashes of the gay, democracy is coming to the USA.
And welcome back to Talk Radio for the rest of us. The Tom Hartman Radio Program, 9 minutes before the hour, will be in a few seconds here. It's our Brunch with Bernie segment. Congressman Bernie Sanders with us, the only independent member of the House of Representatives. Bernie.org, his website, 866-440-8466, our telephone number. And let's see here, Stephen in Inverness, Florida on the line. You're live with Bernie Sanders.
Thank you for taking the call, Tom. Best hour of the week on Sirius Radio, and Bernie, best of those hours. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
I have more of a comment, and I'd like to hear your comment on it, your take on it. We talk very much about the intelligence in the run-up to Iraq, yet I kind of think that's a moot point to even be discussing, given the existence of the document, the Project for a New American Century, and, you know, the influence of Wolfowitz and Pearl and all of those guys on that. You know, in 1996, was that document not truly in existence? Mm-hmm. And did it not call for the invasion of Iraq?
It was 98.
98?
Yeah, it was 98. And Jeb Bush signed it, by the way, as
and
well.
Jeb Bush did sign it.
Yeah, and Don Rumsfeld.
Yeah.
So I guess, Stephen, thanks for the call. Bernie, I guess...
Well, what Stephen is suggesting is that what has unfolded are at least some ideas that people were talking about and putting into paper years and years before, and I think that's a very important point. The suggestion that I made a moment ago, though, is these are precisely the kind of issues that the Congress has got to investigate. Is it true, as President Bush has said repeatedly, that he went into Iraq because he got faulty intelligence? Or, as we have just heard, is there evidence suggesting that maybe this is part of long-term thinking and part of neocons? These are the kinds of discussions that the American people need to hear. And these are the questions that need to be answered.
Stu in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. You're live with Bernie Sanders.
Hi, Bernie. Can you and Tom? Can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh, great. I just had a question. Even though it seems like this new legislation that was passed is unconstitutional, and we can't really rely on the court the way it is to overturn it, it doesn't necessarily mean that he won't be having to account for potential war crimes that may have already been committed or will be committed since this has been giving him a free pass on
Are you talking about George W. Bush and an illegal war? Is that your point, Stu?
Right, because, yeah. I mean, that's the International War Crimes Court in The Hague, so they can still bring him up, right?
Bernie?
Well, I guess, you know, again, the point here is we need thorough investigations and hearings about the war in Iraq, as well as many, many other issues. This administration is not only the most reactionary, Tom, it is the most incompetent administration, and along with their Republican friends in the House and Senate, likely the most corrupt administration and leadership in modern American history. And we need to thoroughly understand what they have done and why they did it. One of the things that we now take for granted is these guys can do almost anything they want without serious questioning on the part of the Congress, because essentially we have a rubber stamp House and Senate. That is why November 7th election is so very important.
Roland in Woodby Island, Washington. Hey, Roland.
Good morning. Delighted to have a chance to say hello to Bernie. I'm a modest contributor to your campaign. I followed your career since you were mayor of Burlington. The question I have, oh, and by the way, I'm fascinated with your having an Irish wife. The question I have is, how much influence do you think the Democratic Leadership Council has in the House of Representatives?
The DLC?
Yeah.
Well, obviously they have significant influence. It is no secret that there are a number of conservative Democrats, people who, for example, support Bush's and Clinton's trade policies, which I believe have been a disaster. The DLC and their associates are able to raise substantial sums of money from conservative organizations, from big business, and they certainly do have an impact on some members of the Democratic Party. On the other hand, you have a large group of Democrats who are progressives, who are fighting very hard for working families, who are prepared to stand up to corporate America and big money interests.
Mark in Grand Rapids, Michigan, you're live with Bernie.
Hello, gentlemen. President Clinton used the RICO statute on pro-life demonstrators when he was in office. What will happen in 2009 if Hillary Clinton is the president and they have given the executive branch this much power? What are they going to say then? She'll be able to do whatever she wants.
Well, by the way, that's an interesting point that I think some conservatives, there are, believe me, a number of conservatives who are speaking out against the president's abuse of the Constitution and trying to accumulate more and more power for the White House. And one of the arguments they are making is precisely that. George Bush is not the only president that this country is going to have. You could have a Hillary Clinton. You could have somebody else. Do you want to give that person the kind of power that George W. Bush has today? So that is a very interesting point that some Republicans, in fact, do understand.
There's got to be a lot of Republicans thinking, wait a minute, we just gave the president the power to throw anybody in jail, simply on his word, forever, without access to the courts, and Hillary might be next? Yeah, it's spooky. Congressman Bernie Sanders, Bernie, thanks so much for being with us.
Good to be with you, Tom.
Bernie.org is website. Bernie Sanders, a great man, the only independent in the House of Representatives. It's the Tom Hartman radio program. Coming up, David Bossie is going to be with us. He's with CitizensUnited.org. Citizens United, he's author of Intelligence Failure, How Clinton's National Security Policy Set the State for 9/11. In other words, he's going to try and tell us how Bill Clinton is to blame for everything. That should be fascinating. 57 minutes past there. We'll be right back.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
Well, Bob Woodward's book is not out, but it is out. This is incredible. This the latest revelation, this in the published in today's New York Daily's, what is it, the New York Daily News. There we go, the New York Daily News. This is quoting from Bob Woodward's book. The CIA's top counterterrorism officials felt that they could have killed Osama bin Laden in the months before 9/11. But when they went to George Bush, they got the brush off, seeking money and authorization. In an urgent July 2001 meeting with Condi Rice, CIA Director George Tenet and his counterterrorism head Kofor Black, quote, went over top secret intelligence pointing to an impending attack that would be in the U.S. 9/11 and sounded the loudest warning to the White House of a likely attack on the U.S. by bin Laden. Woodward writes that Rice was polite but brushed them off. That from today's New York Post. Now, the other side of it. David Bossie is with us. He's president of Citizens United, the website citizensunited.org, and the author of a book called Intelligence Failure, How Clinton's National Security Policy Set the Stage for 9/11. And David, I know before we get into this, you also wanted to mention that you have a your website, I looking at Citizens United right now, really two issues. This is one. The other is that you're concerned about border security. You have a new movie, BorderWarMovie.com is that one.
That's right. Thank you for having me. Good to be with you.
Sure.
And that is right. We have our new film premiering around the country. It's opening all over the country right now, and we have it's Border War, the battle over illegal immigration, and it's people can go to BorderWarMovie.com and take a look at the trailer. It's a really interesting look at from both sides of the issue on that. But
well, and this is an area probably where you and I have more agreement than disagreement. But here's the thing that concerns me. Back in 2004. Salon magazine profiled you, and this is not news to you. They called you a political hitman, renowned Republican dirty trickster. They said you spent much of the 90s often at the epicenter of churning out stories about President Clinton deftly feeding the press and Capitol Hill investigators outlandish and usually unsubstantiated assertions. The blowing up a watermelon with this guy Vince Foster and all this. Why are you continuing in the face of such overwhelming evidence that the Bush administration did essentially nothing from the time that Bush was installed by the Supreme Court in January 2001 until 9/11, did absolutely nothing to prevent 9/11, why are you continuing to try and drag Bill Clinton into this?
Well, first of all, Tom, as somebody on the radio every day talking about current events, and being a student, and I see and I know you're an author of many books, and so therefore you respect solid research, I would suspect, having looked into a lot of these issues yourself.
I have your book right here with me.
Okay.
And I spent about an hour and a half with it this morning.
And by the way, that book came out 2.5 years ago. It's not like I threw it together and decided, it's a hot topic today. I wrote that book 2.5 years ago because I felt then, as I do now, finally people are starting to pay attention to the fact that Bill Clinton failed miserably and decisively over his 8 years as president on an entire host of issues, from the degradation of the military and our intelligence services to more specifically the human intelligence gathering capability of this country. People say, but Bush hasn't done enough. And you're right. And let me tell you, I agree that President Bush hasn't done enough in certain areas. And I believe that President Bush in those measly eight months that he had prior to 9/11, in some of these issues that you bring up, that you brought up just in the open, yes. Do I wish he had done other things differently? Do I hold him accountable for that? Absolutely. But you guys, if you're going to be intellectually honest, also have to address the fact that for 8 years, well, see, I don't hold Bill Clinton responsible for the first World Trade Center bombing, okay? But I hold him responsible for the second, okay? I hold him responsible for 9/11 because it was in his first administration, 48 days or something into his first administration, that Al-Qaeda, nobody knew it at the moment, at that particular moment in time, that Osama bin Laden and his people were behind that.
There was no connection to Al-Qaeda until 1996.
Of course not. But see, so I don't hold Bill Clinton. I say, oh my God, he should have done something the day
but,
after.
But let me, David, we have a limited amount of time here, and if either one of us, do long speeches, it isn't going to do either one of us any service. Let me just say, okay, for the sake of argument, I'm not going to stand here and defend Bill Clinton's, what he did or didn't do with the intelligence service of the military. That's a whole huge debate, and you actually cover that rather exhaustively in your book. What I'm fascinated by is that conservatives, by and large, who claim that they are concerned about the future of this country and the present of this country, are not paying attention to the fact that I spoke with Sandy Berger. I've talked with Al Gore. When these guys, and in fact, a couple of weeks ago, I talked with Bill Clinton. In fact, I introduced him at a gig up in Seattle, and all three of these men have explicitly and on the record said that they told their counterparts in January 2001, when they left office, Sandy Berger told Condi Rice, your first priority is going to be getting Osama bin Laden. Al Gore told Dick Cheney, your first priority is going to be Osama bin Laden because he's coming to hit us. Bill Clinton told George W. Bush.
This is all made up.
No,
it's fiction.
No, this is in the 9/11 report. This is in the 9/11 report.
Okay.
So Condoleezza Rice will acknowledge what I just told you, David Bossie. So the question is, why are you not concerned about the fact that the guy who is still in office right this minute and who has the power to do things has completely failed? I mean, he put Dick Cheney in charge of the counterterrorism task force, and they never met until September of 2001.
And Al Gore, who you just stated, was somebody who claims, and I, by the way, don't believe that. I think that's an out-and-out quote, lie by Al Gore, just one of his dozens.
The 9/11 Commission claims it.
The guy couldn't tell the truth if he had to.
The 9/11 Commission claims it.
He's a convicted felon. The guy was putting documents down his pants to hide from the 9/11 Commission. So let's not lose facts. Let's not lose sight of the facts, okay, first of all. Second of all, I agree with you that Bush didn't do enough, but...
Bush didn't do anything.
But, oh, my God, hold on. He wouldn't have had to. He wouldn't have been in the position to fail if Bill Clinton had taken care of business.
Bill Clinton handed off. Dick Clark went to the White House, and he had this is from Time Magazine, August 4th, 02. The terrorism briefing in the White House Situation Room in January 2001 was delivered by Richard Clark. Senior officials from both the Clinton and Bush administrations say that Clark had a set of proposals to roll back al-Qaeda. In fact, the heading of slide 14 of the PowerPoint presentation reads, "Response to al-Qaeda rollback."
Let's deal with the realities of the situation.
The reality of the situation is that Dick Clark went before Bush and said, "Stop al-Qaeda," and Bush said, no, we're going to do missile defense. That was the focus of the Bush administration, missile defense.
Okay, look, you and I both know that when the president comes in, first of all, as you well pointed out in your introduction here, that Bill Clinton, that George Bush became president after an extended Supreme Court debate and argument, and obviously came into office with his transition late. He was trying, and I say that about Bill Clinton.
He took office the same day every president has taken office since 1806.
But the transition
1804.
Was started late. What I'm saying, I'm not making excuses. I'm living in reality. Presidents come in, there's a transition period. You lose days, weeks, months trying to get your people in the right classification for secret
George Tenet didn't need any transition.
He should have been bound.
Dick Clark didn't need any transition. Both of these guys were saying, we need to take down al-Qaeda, and Bush was saying, no, that was Clinton's obsession. We're not going to do what was Clinton's obsession. We're going to do missile defense.
Mm-hmm. See, and that's what you want to do is set
This is what Connie Rice said. On 9/11, she was going to give a speech on missile defense.
Okay, so what? Missile defense is an important element of our national
security. She told Dick Clark that
5 years ago. Why are you saying, look,
because they wanted to ignore al-Qaeda.
What you want to do is you want to say that back prior to 9/11, that they should have had a single-minded focus on this one particular issue.
Yes.
Okay? And when they did not have the benefit of 8 years of, like Bill Clinton did.
They certainly did not have the benefit of those 8 years. They had the same CIA director who'd been there. They knew everything that happened during those 8 years.
Look, I understand what you're trying to do. You're trying to base that, you're trying to defend Bill Clinton's record, and his record is...
No, I'm not. I'm willing to agree with you to attack his record. I'm trying to say, why don't you guys also go after Bush?
But I agree with you that he didn't do enough. What I try to say is, deal in reality, that George Bush was not looking at the world through the same lens.
Okay, we'll have to leave it there. David Bossie, the book is Intelligence Failure, the website citizensunited.org. David, thanks for being with us.
Very much, Tom.
16 minutes past the hour.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
Too late to fight, too late to change. It may feel wrong, but all I know is to make it right.
And welcome back to your minimum daily adult requirement of sanity. Tom Hartman here with you. By the way, Link TV, those of you who get it know what it is. Link TV, it's on, where did the page go here? Here we go. It's on DirecTV, Channel 375, Dish Network, Channel 9410. It's on cable in markets in New York, San Francisco, Washington, D.C., and other places. And then you can also get it online, linktv.org. When I was in San Francisco last weekend or the weekend before, whenever that was, sat down with Link TV folks and did an interview. And it has become part of a four-hour special that they're doing. It's called Rich and Poor, Inequality in America. And it's broadcasting on Friday, October 6th, Wednesday, October 11th, and Saturday, October 28th at 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern Time. 4 hours for showing the growing gap between rich and poor. Me, Will Durst, the satirist and humorist. Part of it is Peter Kanoy and Pam Yates' award-winning film Poverty Outlaw, Robert Greenwald's Walmart, The High Cost of Low Price, a speech by Bill Moyers. All of these have been rolled together into this four-hour documentary on Link TV. So just a heads up that that's coming. LinkTV.org is the website if you want more information on it. It's called Rich and Poor, Inequality in America. Just a heads up. 1-866-440-8466, our telephone number, and TomHartmann.com, our website, if you want to drop into our live chat room and say hello. Sharon in Sacramento, California. Hey, Sharon.
Hi, Tom. That guy was horrible.
Oh, he was. You know,
oh, my God. And his last name was Boss. And all I could think of was the statistics showing that Americans hate their bosses and how bosses are always Republicans.
Now, well, here's, I mean, let's give the devil his due. He was very good at trying to accomplish what he was trying to accomplish, which was to keep the focus on Bill Clinton. Every time I tried to bring it back to George Bush, who's actually the president right now, Clinton isn't the president. We can't do anything about him. Every time I tried to bring it back to Bush, he would like it. No, we got to talk about Clinton.
Oh,
and he was quite successful.
He was like
at
a
it,
little 5-year-old.
Well,
and
you know, I thought he did a good job of what he was trying to do. I disagree with it.
From my point of view, he was just a huckster. And you know, he made the point that, well, no, we can't blame Clinton for the 1993 trade bombing. Well, then who do we blame? The president before him, George Bush Senior?
Well, that's a good question. I wish I thought of that one.
Oh, he was just hilarious.
Yeah.
So I hope nobody is listening to him.
Yeah, well, he would probably say, well, then that was Jimmy Carter's fault.
Oh,
I mean,
you just
always go back to the last Democratic president. That's rule one, right?
So the Republicans have had control of everything for, what, 30 years?
More or less, yeah, all the way back to 1980, Ronald Reagan, yeah.
Yeah.
26 years.
Well, I just wanted to do two more things, if I may.
Sure.
I wanted to identify myself as Jane Payne, the wonderful person who wrote you a very nice recommendation on your book on Amazon.com.
Oh, well, thank you, Sharon.
Yes, and also we are trying to get something through here in California called the National Popular Vote.
And what's that?
That is sponsored by Jim Dean's party.
Mm-hmm. You mean democracyfororegon.com?
Democracy for America.
Or democracyforamerica.com. Yeah, I'm sorry. There's one here in Oregon as well.
Okay. And this would award California's electoral votes to the winner of the national popular vote.
Oh, interesting.
And we're asking people to call Arnold Schwarzenegger. It's going to be on his desk next week.
This has passed the legislature?
Yes. I'm looking at an update from Democracy for America right now from Charles Chamberlain. It says the California legislature has approved legislation that would award Californians electoral votes to the winner of the national popular vote. The bill now goes to Schwarzenegger, who may sign or veto it. He will make his decision anytime between now and December 30th.
Fascinating. Now, let me just work this through in my mind here for a minute. The Electoral College, the law, the federal law, the Constitution, the law that it created the Electoral College, says that the states can decide how they want to send their electors. They can pick their own electors, and that the electors can vote for whomever they want. The state can tell them who to vote for, but they can't control who they vote for. So in practice, that in the early years of this country, that played out a lot of ways. The electors were picked in smoke-filled rooms. The electors were, in some cases, appointed by the Senate, in other cases, by the House. But the bottom line is that you know, the number of electors that a state has is the number of its elected representatives. Even the smallest state has three. They have one House member of the House, like Vermont, one member of the House and two senators. By saying that California is going to throw its electors to the winner of the majority, California is so large and has so many electors, you're effectively doing away with the Electoral College.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the goal?
I don't know it well enough. Maybe you can get this Chamberlain guy on.
Yeah, because it seems like that would be the upshot, is that it would effectively force the Electoral College, it would cause the Electoral College basically to go with the majority vote. And, you know, that's interesting. That's really interesting. Because
yeah.
Then we would have I have no problem with the majority vote in the United States. My concern with doing away with the Electoral College is that then, it would allow politicians to only campaign in 6 or 8 states.
Yeah,
and maybe I think the 12 actually is the maximum number, and win or lose an election and ignore the rest of the United States. But what this would mean is that California couldn't be part of that, and California is like a sixth of the United States, or a sixth of our economy. I don't know population wise. That's fascinating. Yeah, we'll get David on that and get this guy on the air. Thank you very much for the heads up, Sharon. I appreciate it. 27 minutes past the hour.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
There's a Vietnam vet with a cardboard sign sitting there by the left turn line. A flag on his wheelchair flapping in the breeze. One leg missing, both hands free. No one's paying much mind to him. The VA budget's just stretched to thin, and there's more coming back from the Mideast war. We can't make it here anymore. And that big old building was a textile mill. It fed our kids and it paid our bills, but they turned us out and they closed the doors. We can't make it here anymore.
Now in Bush World, we just we can't make it here anymore. We just can't make it here. It's amazing the ongoing reports about the evisceration of the American middle class by Bush. Not by Bush. In fact, we need to stop demonizing Bush. He's not running for re-election. It's the Republicans. And frankly, it's not even the Republicans. It's the conservatives, because there are conservative Democrats who are right there in lockstep with these guys. And that's what needs to be pointed out, is that this is all about class warfare. This is all about economic warfare. This is all about ending democracy and replacing it with a pastiche of democracy, a pretend democracy, a puppet democracy, a cartoon democracy, so that, you know, people will have their bread and circus. They can eat at McDonald's and they can watch their shows on TV and have their video games and be happy. As long as they have enough sports, everything's fine, right? 1-866-440-8466, our telephone number. Tom in Minneapolis. Hey, Tom.
Hi. Well, I'd still prefer conservative Democrat. No, it's the Republicans. That's the word.
Yeah, well, the bottom line is, in this election, even if the Democrat that I was voting for was a conservative Democrat, and to some extent I will be when I vote for my member of the House of Representatives,
right,
I'm still going to vote for the Democrat, because we have to have Democratic control of the House or Senate.
Exactly.
And then once we've got that, then you go about the business of working in the primaries to replace some of, well, like we just did with Joe Lieberman, you know.
Yeah, right. I called in about Bush invoking FDR and Truman yesterday, which...
You're kidding.
You heard that, didn't you?
No.
Oh, my God. That's all the media yesterday was talking about, how Bush has laid down the gauntlet by, basically, he said, the party of FDR and Truman has become the cut-and-run party.
Oh, yeah, I did.
Okay.
You're right. Yeah.
Now,
he wasn't quoting FDR and Truman, though.
No,
he
but
was
what,
just
what the deal is there, the opportunity for Dems is to exploit this, because Bush, you know, invoking FDR is like Strom Thurmond invoking Martin Luther King Jr. I mean,
yeah.
This tactic is to still link this occupation of Iraq with World War II, because the Islamo-fascist marketing ploy flopped, so they got to keep somehow figure out a way to do this. And the Dems can exploit this by reminding the voters that Bush and the GOP agenda is to destroy FDR's legacy by dismantling Social Security, by gutting labor, by destroying the New Deal, by defecating on Eleanor Roosevelt's UN Declaration of Human Rights, on and on and on.
As Rush Limbaugh said,
Roosevelt is dead. His policies may live on, but we're in the process of doing something about that as well.
Why don't the Dems take this and run with it and say, yeah, let's bring up FDR and Eleanor, what you're doing about
it. Well, let's hope they're listening to you, Tom. Let's hope they're listening, and that they remember that Franklin Roosevelt, speaking of economic tyranny, not World War II, this was back in 1933, he said this, speaking of economic tyranny, Franklin Roosevelt said,
let me assert my firm belief that the only thing we have to fear is fear itself. aimless, unreasoning, unjustified terror which paralyzes needed efforts to convert retreat into advance.
Yeah, very well said. And he was talking about economically. And when he talked about the economic lords, he talked about this new aristocracy has arisen in America and wrapping themselves in the robes of legal sanction, reaching out to take control of government itself. And he said it is the duty of Americans to confront this economic aristocracy, this new economic aristocracy.
Private enterprise, indeed, became too private. It became privileged enterprise, not free enterprise.
And he continued.
The royalists I have spoken of, the royalists of the economic order, have conceded that political freedom was the business of the government, but they have maintained that economic slavery was nobody's business.
When was the last time you heard a Democrat or anybody talk about economic slavery? And yet here it is.
They granted that the government could protect the citizen in his right to vote, but they denied that the government could do anything to protect the citizen in his right to work and his right to live.
And the Republicans are still doing this. What? Minimum wage increase?
These economic royalists complain that we seek to overthrow the institutions of America. What they really complain of is that we seek to take away their power. Our allegiance to American institutions requires the overthrow of this kind of power.
It requires the overthrow of this kind of power. It doesn't just request it. It requires it. And then Roosevelt, again, history repeating itself.
In vain, they seek to hide behind the flag and the Constitution.
Deja vu all over again. Now they're hiding behind FDR.
But in their blindness, they forget what the flag and the Constitution stand for.
There you go. And Franklin Roosevelt just, you know, laying it out and unambiguously, hey, this is the deal. And Harry Truman, Tom from Minnesota said Bush mentioned Truman yesterday. Well, here's Truman's thoughts on Republican campaigns.
And where have the Republicans been in this fight for morality in government? Do they come out and vote with us to keep the special interests from robbing the public? Not at all. Most of them are on the other side. The same thing when you come to the question of the conduct of government officials. The Republicans make a great whoop and holler about the honesty of federal employees. But they are usually the first to show up in a government office asking for special favors for private interests and in raising Cain if they don't get them.
Yeah, can anybody spell Jack Abram off? I mean, it's a...
These Republican gentlemen can't have it both ways. They can't be for morality on Tuesday and Thursday and then be for special privileges for their clients on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Well, I don't think the black is white campaign of the Republican Party is going to succeed. I think the voters are going to see through this holier-than-thou disguise that our Republican friends are putting on. All the tricks of Republican propaganda cannot make the people forget that the Democratic Party has been working for their welfare.
There you go. Harry Truman. So if Bush wants to use Truman and Roosevelt, hey, we'll do that. We'll go there. No problem. 1-866-440-8466. Bill in Chicago, Illinois. Hey, Bill.
Hi, Tom. Great show as usual.
Thank you.
Okay. You know, I was still calling in about the torture stuff, but I wanted to point out that your guest, these Republican apologists always seem to forget that six of the 8 years that Clinton was in, at least half of the Congress was under their control. You mean it sat back and watched him destroy the intelligence and military capabilities of the United States?
Well, and in fact, he didn't unilaterally have that ability. A lot of those cuts were passed by Republican Congresses saying that they were trying to save money.
Right, absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. But about the torture thing, I'm the retired police detective that calls you every once in a while from Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
Listen, you know, I don't know if you recall. Hello?
Yeah, you're still there, Bill.
A few years back, there was a movie out called Breaker Morant, Australian movie about Australian soldiers fighting in the Boer War in 1900. And anyway, every policeman, most policemen I know, when they saw this movie, they loved it because they realized one thing. What happens to the people that implement these policies when these policies become inconvenient or embarrassing to the policymakers? It's the guy who did it who ends up on trial.
Yeah. So you think, in other words, you're suggesting that the men and women in the Senate yesterday who voted for this loss of American democracy for all practical purposes are the ones who are going to end up paying the price?
No, I think the guys that they have doing it, I think the CIA agents and the interrogators that they have doing this stuff better be aware of the fact what happens down the line when 10 years from now it becomes terribly embarrassing or everything changes radically. Who are the guys going to be holding the proverbial bag, you know?
Yeah, well, the press was reporting that the reason why the CIA has been shutting down some of their overseas foreign prisons is because CIA officers are refusing to participate. They're saying, I don't want to do something I can be prosecuted for.
Well, absolutely. And what will happen if the court overturns it? All those guys that law is out and those, you know.
There you go.
I mean, there you go.
Good point, Bill. Time now for our progressive pop quiz. According to Bob Woodward's new book, Bush rejected an opportunity to do what before 9/11? The sixth caller with the correct answer, 866-440-8466, gets a free copy of my new book, Screwed, autographed by me. 45 minutes past the hour.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
Ooh. It never makes no sense. It never makes no sense. Fire, fire, fire. Light up your lighter. Fire, fire, fire. Oh. Armageddon is a deadly day. Armageddon is a deadly way. They're coming for you every day.
Yeah, Armageddon is deadly, but it's what Bush wants, tragically. Welcome back to Place for Being Progressive. Never felt so good, the Tom Hartman radio program. Coming up on 9 minutes before the hour, congratulations to Mayor Fitzgerald of McMurray, Pennsylvania, for winning our progressive pop quiz. Mayor knew that the correct answer to what was it that, according to Bob Woodward's new book, George W. Bush was given an opportunity to do before 9/11 and chose to dismiss. It was the opportunity to kill Osama bin Laden. CIA went to him, said, hey, we found him. And Bush and Rice said, nah, not important. Condi's got to give a speech on missile defense on 9/11, and that's on September 11th, and that's going to be a big deal because missile defense, that'll put a lot of money in the pockets of our campaign contributors. So, you know, first things first, buddy, the bottom line. 1-866-440-8466, our telephone number. And Dave in Chicago, Illinois. Another call from Chicago. Hey, Dave, what's up?
Hey, Tom. I just had an idea for a national television campaign ad. I don't know who puts those on, but I thought it'd be great to be able to use Ronald Reagan's old slogan of trust but verify. He used to say trust but verify when referring to the Soviet Union and arms deals and whatever. He went over and over, trust but verify. I mean, you could start with a quote from him and then just go on, and you can pick any issue. You could do like a 15-second spot, and you could say, hey, you know, then have George Bush saying the economy's great, and then you say, here are reports that show that, you know, poverty's increased. There is no health care. I mean, you just keep going on. You could do one issue after another, short message, time after time. What's the war going to cost? You know, trust but verify. The war's only going to cost
$30 billion, and, you know, $300 billion later.
Right. It's only going to last 6 weeks, and then, you know, 6 months later. It's only going to, yeah, and another way to apply that would be to voting machines. I could see an ad where you see a person pushing the button and then hear Ronald Reagan's voice say, trust but verify, and the person's looking around going, where's my paper? Where's my ballot? I'd like to verify my vote. Oh, sorry, you're not allowed to do that. This is Diebold. Wendy Wang is with us with the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com, the website. Hey, Wendy.
Hi there, Tom, again. How are you?
Great. You just came back from Guantanamo Bay, and they let you out. I'm impressed.
I know. I know they really wanted to keep me down there and lock me up in one of those little cells and say,
well, you're a liberal. You're a liberal. I think that they're getting ready for us, Wendy.
I know. And I was sweating bullets. Let me tell you, the whole entire time I'm looking around, I'm like, should I say what I want to say or should I just keep my mouth shut? They do have, you know, people with guns standing around. So,
yeah. Well, serious note, I mean, what did you see there? What's your sense of this concentration camp we're running down there?
It's a very, very solemn place. There's no question about it that it is a detention facility. The barbed wires tell you so. The guards standing around tells you so. And, of course, the news media that were guided through this very nice and, I want to say redacted version of what life is actually like, saw very, very little of the daily life of a detainee. We, of course, saw a handful, I want to say five or six individuals in the recreational yards as we were going into one of the medium security camps. And, you know, we saw them walking around. They seemed to be under no duress. They looked at us. We looked back at them. There were no interaction between us.
Well, we've had 5 years to beat any spirit out of them. But, Wendy, I'm confused. Why are we calling these people detainees? Detention implies at some point a person is going to go someplace else. And yet Bush just got legislation yesterday saying he can hold these guys forever.
For the term of the conflict.
So that means they are not detainees. They are internees. And that this is not a detention camp, this is a concentration camp. I mean, I'm not talking, you know, left-wing rhetoric here. I'm talking Webster's, you know, 2006 dictionary.
Well, actually, the Pentagon folks that we went down there with, the Joint Task Force personnel, actually told us that indefinitely could mean the very end of the conflict and press further on just when the conflict will end. They, too, admitted, Tom, that they have no idea when the conflict will end.
Right.
It could
so,
be 20 years down the road, it could be 30, it could be 40, it could be 50.
George Bush has said it won't be in his lifetime.
Apparently not.
So, no, I mean, that's what he said. He said it won't be in our lifetime. And so I think it's fairly clear that what is going on is that the United States is running concentration camps, that we have internees in these concentration camps, inmates in these concentration camps. You were down there. You were able to see them. I'm wondering if the right-wing talk show hosts who were going along with you were horrified at the fact that the United States is holding people in concentration camps without the right to trial.
They were horrified by the fact that the camps provided Qurans in each individual cell, that there was a black arrow pointing towards Mecca, painted wherever the detainees were allowed to pass through, so that at prayer call time that they're able to observe their religious freedom. They felt that the U.S. was actually too compliant in terms of being sensitive to their religious rights.
That's
what they were horrified with. And
you're
the fact
joking.
That. Mm-hmm.
You're serious?
I'm serious.
Right-wing talk show hosts, this was their thing, these guys? How dare they practice
this? I'm not
going to
name names, but one individual pointed out that the interrogation room had what he termed a parka lounger. But, of course, there is a shackle on the floor of this parka lounger where, you know, an individual, an interrogated person, will have to come in and sit down and talk to an interrogator for 2 or 3 hours, however many times a week, shackled to the ground. But they were horrified at the fact that it seemed too luxurious.
They wanted a metal chair with electrodes.
Pretty much.
Where's the electrodes? Amazing.
Like,
Wendy,
are you kidding me? We're giving them a parka lounger. Look at that sofa. My house doesn't even have such a nice sofa. Whatever.
Amazing. Well, I'm sure that during World War II there were Germans who looked at the concentration camps and said, you know, life is too good for these people too. It's horrible. It's horrible. Wendy Wang, Talk Radio News, talkradionews.com. Thanks, Wendy, for the report.
Thank you, Tom. Have
good
a great weekend.
57 minutes past the hour. We'll be back with Robert Greenwald after the news at the top of the hour.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back to the place where progressives fiendishly plot for total world domination. Or at least a good, clean election. You know, we'd really settle for a good, clean election. That really would just kind of do it for most of us, I think, because then... I mean, we all know where America stands on most of these issues, like Iraq, for example, and the privatizing of the war in Iraq. Robert Greenwald is with us. He has a new movie out. He's the director of Iraq for Sale and president of Brave New Films, Iraq for Sale, forsale.org, the website. Robert Greenwald, welcome.
Thank you.
Great to have you here. I was at the... premiere or screening or whatever it was that you did here in Portland last week.
Oh, good.
And, in fact, I asked you a question. I should have probably identified
myself. Yes, I could.
So I'm going to be seeing Joan Seklar tomorrow in Los Angeles.
Wonderful.
Who plugged me into another one of your movies, Unprecedented.
Joan was the director and producer of that. Yep.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, I feel like we're old friends here. In any case, it's great to have you with us. I thought Iraq for Sale was one of the, it was the best documentary on the issue behind the issue of Iraq, the issue that doesn't get talked about, that I've ever seen. It's the investigative reporting that we used to expect of organizations like 60 Minutes, CBS News, 30 years ago, and haven't seen at least since the Reagan administration. And I want to recommend it, unreservedly to our listeners. You are getting this movie out how?
Well, we're getting it out through listeners like yours. It's available at iraqforsale.org. And the good thing is, and thank you so much for that support, is this is an important issue. The timing is great. We've got an election coming up. And what the film is, it's a tool for people all across the country to use. I don't have Universal. It's not being distributed by Paramount. We know it's not being distributed by Fox. Because of my work on OutFox, but thousands of listeners will do screenings, will do house parties, will get copies and show it to friends at church, at school, any place there's a video screen, pizza parlor, bowling alley, people are showing the movie and getting a discussion going and forcing responsibility, because the fact that the head of Kaki, who's provided at Abu Ghraib, interrogators made $20 million last year, is obscene.
Now, Kaki has nothing to do with George Allen.
That's close, but not exactly the same.
This is an acronym.
Yeah, exactly. It's a large corporation, CACI, and they provided over half of the interrogators at Abu Ghraib. The head of Kaki, J.P. London, made $20 million last year. The head of Halliburton, David Lazar, his stock has increased $100 million since the war began. Halliburton, in the movie, and you'll hear from truck drivers, mothers whose kids were killed in the war, and they were killed as a result of corporations doing what they do, which is cutting corners to make profit. And the notion that we're letting corporations profitize from this war in extraordinary high amounts is a travesty of democracy.
Yeah, it really and truly is. And that's the core of the movie, is how Iraq is actually for sale. And there's all these people who are really and truly profiting off it, and in a very real way. So the way you're promoting this is people go to your website, iraqforsale.org. They buy a copy of the movie for $12, $12.95, and they invite a bunch of people over. They put an ad in the local paper or call the local radio station and say, hey, I'm going to be doing a screening or whatever. And bingo, you've got instant theater in your living room kind of thing.
Exactly, in your living room, in your library, at church, at a school, at a union hall. They can, and by signing up on our website, people in their area also will put in the zip code. And then there are people who don't want to go that public. They just want to get copies, and you know, we've had people write in and buying 10, 15, 20 copies, giving them to friends, sending them to elected officials who need to see it, sending it to voters, because in this issue of profiteering, there are a whole series of votes, and you can go to our website and find out how your senator or how your representative voted in the House of Representatives, and it's an issue with the elections coming up where people can say, hey, did you try to protect me and my money and our lives by fighting war profiteering, or did you go along with the corporate boardrooms who are paying you campaign contributions and sell the American citizens out?
Right, and it's a major sellout. Here's the trailer is on the site, is on iraqforsale.org is the website. We're talking with Robert Greenwald, the director of Iraq for Sale and president of Brave New Films. Let me just play a clip from this trailer. Let's see how this works here.
Truck driving was a fun thing for him. He enjoyed it. He was told and convinced that he would be safe.
They all had driven trucks and were truck drivers before they went over there.
I went to make a better life for my family.
We were told he would not be sent into any areas of known danger.
Well, I trusted the company.
They told us, oh, you won't have to worry. You have plenty of protection. Guaranteed $140,000 in 9 months. Anything that sounds too good to be true usually is.
Can the Secretary of Defense, can the Vice President, can this administration take the military to war to feed the greed of contractors?
And that was Janice Karpinski, who has been on this program. In fact, sat in the studio here with us, and she's just laying this out. And you lay it out so well that the Bush administration has seen a war in Iraq as an opportunity to make money for their friends first and foremost.
Well, the amount of money being made was quite shocking to me, and the amount that's been outsourced that to these corporations that are driven by the profit motive. And what you have in the film is members of the military over and over again telling us how much it's hurting their effort, how much it's making them and Americans less safe, how much it's hurting the Iraqi people, where the water is still polluted and hospitals aren't built, but multinational corporations are making millions and millions of dollars of profit. And this has got to stop. And one of the great, maybe the best thing about the films is that, and I've discovered this in the last couple of years, they really are a tool for people to use. So rather than just getting up in the morning and being pissed off or depressed or angry or yelling at your wife or sending an email to a few friends, the films are ways that people can be proactive. They can use them and go out there and show them and get a discussion going, get a dialogue going, get a fight going.
This is a way of converting emotion into activism.
Exactly, rather than just being consumed by our emotion.
Yeah. What caused you, Robert Greenwald, iraqforsale.org, the website, what caused you in the first place to decide to make this movie out of the millions of potential topics you could make a movie about?
Well, it was actually suggested by a friend of mine, Bob Borisaj, who runs a think tank in Washington, D.C., Campaign for America's Future.
Mm-hmm. I know.
And He said to me, and this was in January, it was incredibly quick, and I was not looking to do another film. We were still exhausted from the Walmart movie. We were hundreds of thousands of dollars in debt. And he called and he said, you know, this is an issue that's not being discussed. It's really important, and you should get something done by September so that it can be debated and fought about in the context of the elections, because that's when this kind of an issue can come to the fore. And the minute he said war profiteering, I knew he was right, and I knew, I had no idea it would be so emotional, it would be so personal, that we'd meet so many amazing people, the truck drivers and former Halliburton workers and these amazing mothers, but I just felt, wow, that's a subject we have to hear about, and I didn't know that the connection to the elected officials and the incredible revolving door was protecting these corporations. But
I think at a certain level, we're talking with Robert Greenwald, Iraq for Sale is the movie, iraqforsale.org, the website. At a certain level, a lot of Americans, it's easy to vilify the people.
the guys who are making $140,000 a year driving trucks for Halliburton. And what you do in the movie is you characterize them brilliantly, I might add, as this is just every man. I mean, this is just the ordinary guy who saw an opportunity to maybe make enough money to put his kid through college in 1 year, and he took it. And he had no idea what kind of hell he was walking into. And that hell was provided to him courtesy of Halliburton or one of the other corporations that you out here. And they did not inform him what he was getting into. And he's not, the cynical, mercenary.
Well, I think I totally agree. And we found that over and over again. I mean, many of the truck drivers said, we went to Iraq to do the right thing. We wanted to help the troops. These were people who wanted to pay for their kids' health care. They had to go overseas to do it.
There's one guy who breaks down crying when he's confessing that he's providing the troops with contaminated water because it would save Halliburton money. We got to wrap this up. Robert Greenwald, Iraq for Sale, the movie, iraqforsale.org, the website. Check it out. Schedule a showing in your home. Robert, thank you for being with us.
My
16
pleasure.
Minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back to the place where smart people get their news. Tom Hartman Radio Program, 21 minutes past the hour. Joshua Castile was an interrogator at Abu Ghraib prison in Iraq. He's featured in the movie iraqforsale.org, Iraq for Sale, the website iraqforsale.org. And Joshua, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Thank you.
Glad to have you with us. What was your experience at Abu Ghraib?
Well, it's one of those classic questions that a veteran can never really answer.
Were you with the military or were you with a private contractor?
No, I was a part of the 202nd Military Intelligence Battalion. I was an Army interrogator.
Okay, and is that the group that was working for Janice Karpinski?
Well, I was a part of the group that was sent in after the scandal broke. We were part of the Abu Ghraib space lift, so to speak.
Right,
and so we were the unit that was supposed to change the face of Abu Ghraib and do things right.
Okay, and what happened?
Well, I can certainly validate that torture had ceased at the prison by the time that my unit came in to be the change of the guard. But on the issue of torture alone, what happened is that when all of the cameras of the world turned on us, all of the dark activity just went elsewhere. And you would find the exact same things or worse happening on mobile interrogation teams with special forces, with the Marine Corps. And my friends who were interrogators on those units had experiences just strikingly parallel to what was happening at Abu Ghraib.
You mean the electrodes and the hot and cold water and the beatings?
Oh, yeah. Friends of mine who would strip men naked during the dead of winter, pour cold water over them, and then place them in front of air conditioning units to induce hypothermia, or smashing hands with hammers, or using the blunt edge of an axe to beat up a detainee. These things were happening quite widely throughout the theater of battle.
Now, until the legislation that was passed yesterday was passed, what you were describing is our war crimes.
Oh, absolutely. And if I had the opportunity personally, I was a deployed soldier during this time. I would be more than happy to hold Bush and Cheney's hands to the Hague tribunals and be tried along with them.
But not without them, I would think.
Certainly not without them. It would be great no matter what the cost.
Has the military contacted you and said, do you have knowledge of war crimes? We'd like you to testify.
Absolutely not.
Have you attempted to bring that forward to them?
Well, I made everything that I witnessed aware to the military. I wrote reports about torture.
This is no surprise to them. What was the role of the private? I'm sorry to be moving along so fast, but we only have about 2 minutes left, and we're talking with Joshua Castile. He was a military interrogator at Abu Ghraib. I'm curious, what were the role of the private contractors in that prison?
Essentially everything. Everything from all of the menial tasks that typically we outsource to third-party nationals, and all the way up to intelligence analysis. I'm guessing that roughly 30 to 40% of the personnel at the prison were privately contracted. At least 30 to 40%.
Were they more or less brutal or outside the law than those in the military? I mean, you've described some of your peers in the military as being pretty outside the bounds of the law.
Yeah. Well, with regard to the private contractors, the way things worked at Abu Ghraib is that in interrogations, private contractors always had to work in conjunction with people who were regular Army or from the Marine Corps, the Navy, or the Air Force, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But Abu Ghraib is one very small slice of what happens throughout the theater of combat in Iraq, and the biggest problem. Apart from the economic aspects of all of the private contracting, is the lack of accountability extending to those who are part of units not at places of international media attention. And so if you had people that were private contractors that were a part of mobile interrogation teams, that were a part of the detention and acquisition units that would go and raid houses, we as interrogators would hear stories time and time again about people who had been beaten up and had been abused, and it was always very similar factual information from a wide range of sources. It's always this person was wearing a baseball cap on backwards, his flak vest was blue, not camouflage, always indicative of either private contractors or special operations.
Yesterday, the New York Times suggested that if the law that was passed yesterday, and it was passed, that rape would become a legal method of interrogation. Was rape used as an interrogation method, to your knowledge?
Not to my knowledge. I have friends who attest to it, but I have no firsthand knowledge of that.
But you've heard of it being used?
Certainly.
Yeah. My goodness. Joshua Castile, you're in the movie Iraq for Sale. And thank you for your service to your country. And for most importantly, for shining a light on this. I really honor you for doing that. And thank you for coming on the program and being so candid with us.
My pleasure. I look myself in the mirror.
Yeah. Good. Indeed, we all do. Good talking to you. Iraqforsale.org, the website. 27 minutes past the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Speaking of places we got to get out of, Iraq is one of them. I'll tell you. Robert Greenwald, Iraq for Sale, iraqforsale.org. This is a big deal. You got to check this thing out. In the meantime, let's take a quick look at what's going on with the U.S. occupation of Iraq.
I want to know the men in the shadows of. I want to hear somebody asking them why. They can be counted on to tell us who our enemies are. But they're never the ones to fight or to die. And they're alive in the balance.
Following our security and other developments in Iraq, reported on Friday as of 08:30 GMT from Reuters, the Associated Press, New York Times, and other sources, Baghdad Two roadside bombs exploded in quick succession. Boy, a tough word there. Near the National Theater in central Baghdad, killing one passerby and wounding 10, police said. Near Kirkuk, gunmen firing from a car killed 3 Iraqi soldiers, 2 of them brothers, in a small town of Rashad, 20 kilometers southwest of the northern oil city of Kirkuk. Soldiers were driving to join their unit when the gunman's car blocked their way. The New York Times News Service, as many as 60 bodies, many of them shot in the head at close range and bearing signs of torture, were discovered across the city of Baghdad yesterday, according to an Interior Ministry spokesman. The death toll is one of the highest in weeks and came as U.S. and Iraqi troops continue to sweep Baghdad's most dangerous neighborhoods in an effort to control the capital. Also on Thursday, an Islamist internet site posted an audio clip of a man it identified as Hamza al-Mahir, an Egyptian man who the U.S. military has said is al-Qaeda's new chief in Iraq. In the 20-minute clip, the man exhorts fellow Sunni fighters to work hard in this holy month to capture some Christian dogs to trade for Omar Amel Rahmad, who is imprisoned in the United States. He was convicted in 1995 of the first attempt to blow up the World Trade Center. Meanwhile, L.A. Times Washington Post service reports that the contractor that botched construction of a $75 million police academy in Baghdad so badly that human waste dripped from the ceilings has produced shoddy work in 13 out of 14 projects reviewed by federal auditors, according to the top official monitoring Iraq's reconstruction in testimony before Congress yesterday. In a House hearing on what has gone wrong with reconstruction contracts in Iraq, Parsons Corp quickly became the focus, taking bipartisan heat for its record of falling short on critical projects. The Pasadena, California firm was supposed to build facilities at the heart of the $21 billion U.S.-led reconstruction program, including fire stations, border forts, and health care centers, but inspectors have found a list of flaws in the firm's work. And then it just goes on and on and on. As Henry Waxman said, this is the lens through which Iraqis will now be seen. Americans, incompetence, profiteering, arrogance, and human waste oozing out of the ceilings as a result. It's tragic. And finally, this from the McClatchy News Service, Drew Brown. The war in Iraq has become such a drain on the Army and the Marines that it has seriously damaged the U.S. military's ability to respond if other crises arise. Speaking at the Center for Strategic and International Studies, Congressman John Murtha and Neil Abercrombie of Hawaii warned that because funding for the military has been siphoned off to pay for the war, the Army and Marines are running dangerously short of necessary troops, equipment, and training to stay combat ready. It's grim. 1-866-440-8466, our telephone number. Jeremy in Madison, Wisconsin. Hey, Jeremy, what's on your mind today?
Hey, yeah, I wanted to spread some word over the air about this campaign that I'm starting. It's a Fenbush spinach campaign.
It's like
I want everyone, instead of throwing it away, to send him spinach. And if his advisors aren't there, he'll say, hey, Laura, guess what? This is a housewarming gift.
Yeah, why do you want to send him spinach?
To send a message to him saying that we'd rather have him eat the spinach than be doing the stuff he's doing right now.
You mean if you think that the spinach is contaminated or something? That would be a crime, Jeremy, to send something that's contaminated. But
you don't know whether it's contaminated or not.
Yeah, I guess. I'm not going to go there. I'm sorry, but I do think that it is a good time for us to let all of our elected officials. Well, we did, frankly, a very good job of it yesterday, letting our officials know that we are horrified by what's going on. Ann in Eugene, Oregon. Hey, Ann.
Hi. I noticed that this new detainee bill will allow the president to decide who has the divine right to freedom until the quote-unquote war on terror is over.
Right.
Now, did Congress ever declare a, quote, war on terror?
No.
Unquote?
No.
So they're still in the position that what he's done is he never got back to them. And therefore, he violated the terms of
signed. In fact, what's particularly interesting, Ann, is that the piece of legislation that the House and Senate passed, which was opposed, by the way, and I wish one day Chris Matthews would get this right. He, over and over and over again, Republicans say, well, all the Democrats supported giving Bush the authority to go to war. No, the majority of Democrats in the House opposed it. Yes, the majority of Democrats in the Senate voted for it. But in the House of Representatives, the majority of Democrats opposed it. That piece of legislation said that if Bush was going to go to war, he had to provide in writing a letter to Congress stating, A, that he was going to war, that hostilities were going to commence, and B, that the specific reason was in some way connected to 9/11.
Oh, okay.
And he did. He wrote a letter to Congress saying that he was doing it and that he was doing it because of 9/11. And that was a lie.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it just boggles my mind that people I just can't, you know, if Clinton had done that, it would have been beaten into us until 3-year-old children could recite it in their sleep.
Especially since the war on terror, that expression has no meaning. It's vague.
That's right.
So I don't know how you can have legislation coming from it.
No. Lyndon Johnson declared a war on poverty. We've declared wars on illiteracy, but they're rhetorical devices, and everybody acknowledges that they're rhetorical devices.
You mentioned Senator Smith yesterday.
Yes.
Telling people we have cover here because in 2 years it'll be overturned by the Senate. By the Supreme Court. He actually said that?
What he said, and this is, I watched on television as he was saying it yesterday. It was during a commercial break during my morning program.
Okay.
And this is my recollection, and we'll give Senator Smith his due on this. This is not a verbatim quote. But
uh-huh.
What I recall hearing him say was, we will pass this legislation and leave it to the judiciary to determine whether or not it will stand up. Whether it will hold muster.
But
that was the
happened.
Phrase that he used.
Right, that's already happened, actually, and then they got hemmed in, so they're doing it again. So what's to stop them from doing it again?
Well, in my opinion, what he was saying in code was, you know, this is going to buy us a couple of years.
Oh, God. This is unbelievable.
Yeah, well,
especially since they say there's oversight, but my question is, how meaningful is it? Suppose he rounds up people and he says, okay, I'm going to keep them for the duration of this, quote, war on terror, unquote. What does Congress do then if they don't agree?
Well, here's what's freaky. He may have been rounding up people all along. I mean, we learned about Jose Padilla because it got leaked to the media. There might, you know, the question has been asked of this administration, are there others who have been taken, other American citizens who have been taken and put in prison with no charges, who have disappeared like people did during in Pinochet's Chile? And the response of the Bush administration is, we can't answer that question.
Okay. And Gonzalez is telling judges now, hey, listen, you know, during wartime, you can't question what the president is doing.
Well, not just Gonzalez. I mean, they're all saying that. That's the official Republican talking point. Ann, thank you for the call. I appreciate it. Good to hear from you. Bill in Long Island. Hey, Bill, what's up?
Hi, Tom. I was thinking about something. It's been quite a few years since I had a civics course, because I'm 53 now. But from what I remember now, this law that was passed yesterday, if it gets overturned right now, I mean, say 2 years from now, what would happen is this, though, as far as I think. Everything that George Bush has done from today forward, he gets a pass on. But if the law is overturned, everything he did from before the law was enacted back, he still is held accountable for.
It could. It may well be. There's... Andrew's got you potted down for a second. There's a political reality here, though, and that is that politicians are very much interested in the next election and in moving ahead. And once Bush is no longer in office, there's going to be very little stomach, even among the most vigorous of the Democrats, to prosecute him. I mean, it's just tragically unlikely. Now, what may happen is that some European country they decide to prosecute him, and then we're really in a pickle. I mean, you know, then we're in the situation that Chile was with Pinochet. He shows up in London, and boom, they snatch him. Rob in Seattle. Hey, Rob, we have a minute before we have to take a break. What's up?
Hey, I was just calling basically about the war on terror terminology, and what, you know, we had a discussion last night about this, and what we thought was funny is if the so-called terrorists were really out to take over America and strip us of our freedoms, why aren't they starting with smaller countries and taking over those governments and creating basically a small terrorist empire?
Well, let me flip it around, Rob. The terrorists are out to take over America and strip us of our freedoms, and they did it yesterday.
All right. I'll agree with you 100% on that.
Yeah, and the head of them is sitting in 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. I mean, George W. Bush is using terror as his primary technique for political advantage here in the United States. And that, I think, falls fairly well into the line of the definition of a terrorist.
Absolutely. We were just thinking, why hasn't Al-Qaeda attempted to take over Egypt and use that as their base of operations or some other country?
Well, the Muslim Brotherhood is actually what Al-Qaeda grew out of, and they're very active in Egypt. That's one of the reasons why when Mubarak recently had elections, he sort of had to stop them in mid-course because it looked like the Muslim Brotherhood would take over. I mean, this is the problem. It's that you can't have a democracy without a strong and well-educated middle class. More in a second. 45 minutes past the hour.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
I see trees of green, red roses too. I see them bloom for me and you. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. I see skies of blue and clouds of white, the bright blessed day, the dark sacred night, and I think to myself, what a wonderful world.
Hey, special thanks to my producer, David Poole, to Louise Hartman, to Andrew Dunn, to Lauren Kirshner at Air America Radio, to Ben and Shelby at White Rose Society and RadioPower.org, to Sue Nethercutt and the folks in our chat room, and Mike Toth, who does our audio archives on our website, to our affiliates, our sponsors, and to you for listening to our program. We do appreciate it. And just a quick heads up for those of you listening today, Friday. Tomorrow, Saturday, September 30th, I'll be at Roman's Bookstore in Pasadena at 4 p.m. and at the Bodhi Tree in Los Angeles and Hollywood at 8 p.m. signing Screwed, The Undeclared War Against the Middle Class, my new book. October 5th, Annie Bloom's in Portland. October 6th, Town Hall in Seattle. And you can find it all at tomhartman.com, our website. 1-866-440-8466. Billy Sunshine in Santa Cruz, California. Billy, our listeners, our longtime listeners, certainly remember all the many times you've called into our program. You now have your own.
Yes, I do, and you're going to be on my show on Sunday at 3:15.
And I'm looking forward to it.
And I just wanted your people to know where they could find that, since we've got the website.
Okay.
It's KRXA540.com.
Great, for those folks who are outside the Santa Cruz area.
Yeah, exactly. You know, this is Banned Books Week, Tom.
No, I didn't know that, though.
Yep. This is the book of the week when the library sort of celebrates the fact that people are trying to ban books. And
they're having none of it. They're having none of it, yeah.
Of course. And you know, they start out sort of trying to ban books with funny words in them or about homosexuality, but it isn't too long before they ban books that just sort of attack our government. And, you know, you too could be on that list any day now with Screwed.
There you go. Yeah. Who knows? It's actually not the most subversive book I've written, but probably We the People is the most subversive. But or you, Billy, for the talk show that you're doing there in KRXA.
Let's see just how subversive we can get on Sunday. What do you
think? Okay, we'll do it from 3 to 5 on KRXA. Thanks, Billy. Good talking with you. 1-866-440-8466. Flaringo in New York City. Hey.
Hey, thanks for having me on. Real
sure.
Quick, I'm not a cartoonist, but I have an idea for a cartoon if there's anybody listening.
Okay.
If they can draw three elephants stampeding in terror away from a mouse and trampling a guy holding a document, they should make the mouse look like Bin Laden. The elephants would be labeled the House, the White House, and the Senate, and the guy backing and getting trampled is Uncle Sam, holding the Constitution.
Brilliant. Brilliant.
I'd love to see that posted on Daily Coast or someplace.
Yeah, well done, Flaringo. Hopefully somebody will hear it and pick it up and go with it. A good one. Rebecca in Edmond, Washington.
Hi, thank you. Well, I was going back to your comment about Gordon Smith saying, well, we'll just let the courts decide about the constitutionality of the detainee treatment bill.
Right. Well, actually, he was talking about habeas corpus at that particular moment in time, yes.
Okay. Well, I guess I know you know this, but I just hope everybody's paying attention to the fact that the Republicans are working very fast to load the courts with the right-wing judges so that by the time that gets to the courts, they'll win. And
yeah, well, that's the other point. If Justice Kennedy goes, he's the swing vote right now. If Justice Kennedy goes and gets replaced by another right-wing crank like Bush has put on the last two, and the Democrats just bend over one more time, I mean, this is the game is over for a generation.
But the state Supreme Courts, too, are very important. Right now in Washington, we have three really important state Supreme Court judges races, and there's one candidate that the Republicans are putting lots of money behind. And his opponent is the incumbent Susan Owens, the nonpartisan race, of course.
Right.
But they are just spending millions of dollars to get rid of her, and we're really pushing back hard. So
good.
People need to pay attention to these court races.
And in the state of Washington, people should vote for Susan Owens. For
Susan Owens,
court.
Yep.
Yeah, okay.
And Jerry Alexander. You bet.
Thank you, Rebecca.
Thank you.
Good
Bye.
To hear from you. I appreciate it. Steve, is it Stephen or Stephen in
it's
Sacramento?
Stephen. I'm Stephen. An art steward here in Sacramento.
Uh-huh.
I just want to let you know we pagans over here, you know, do support you.
Well, thank you.
And I know you're a Christian, so I hope you don't mind pagans.
That's good. No, I love pagans.
Oh, that's great. That's great. And I'm pretty upset about what happened yesterday. I'm a total left-winger.
Mm-hmm.
You know, beyond left-wing, actually.
Yeah.
So I'm not a liberal.
So what's your comment or question?
Well, I'm concerned about what we do now. Now, are we just waiting for the Supreme Court to come up with something?
I think what we have to do now is double whatever efforts we have been making to have Democrats take control of the House and Senate in this coming election in, 39 days or so from now. We need to double that effort. If you have ever in your life given $10 to a political candidate, give 20 today. I mean, you know, if you've ever shown up for at a Democratic Party meeting or Green Party or Republican Party, whatever it may be, forget the Republican Party for right now. They're just too toxic. There's no good Republican candidates at this moment, given who the leadership is.
Green Party.
Yeah, but then show up and start going door to door on behalf of candidates who are going to help take back the House and Senate. And even if you're a Green, hold your breath and just help get a Democrat elected until the Democrats are in control. We need to work for more Green Party activity at a local level. That's a really important thing. They're doing great work at a local level. At the national level, first we've got to get the Democrats into power, and then we can, and I say this as somebody who voted for Ralph Nader in 2000. I confess, I was wrong. I was wrong. We need to get them back in. On Monday, Alekin Velshi is going to be on here, a conservative. He's going to be talking about radical Islam. It'll be an interesting conversation. And David Callahan. Remember, my friends, democracy begins with you. Tag, you're it. We'll see you Monday.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.